See you, Kevin. Next item on the agenda is a carryover item from last month.
Mr. Chairman, I will note that Mary Hill has appeared.
That's correct. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Excuse me. That's where you're going?
That's where we're progressing. Thank you, sir, very much. Certainly appreciate it. Commissioner Pruitt directed that a report be made pertaining to Ms. Mary Hill's oyster planting ground situation. After receiving and reading the minutes of the previous meeting, I have directed staff to provide what I believe to be a comprehensive report. But in order to get the gist of the entire matter, I think we need to start from the beginning. So what I would like to do is have staff, primarily Mr. Ben Stagg, give a report initially on the applications and the chronology of applications of Ms. Hill. After that, I will have Ms. Jane McCroskey, Chief of Administration and Finance, lay out the what we have done in an attempt to assist Ms. Hill in the resolution of these problems. Mr. Stagg?
Mr. Bowman, I have a written report here. It's a double packet.
Do you have a copy for Ms. Hill? May one. There you go. All right. Let's see where we go to here. You and four.
The first one that says memorandum is basically what I'm going to use for my report. The second is just a copy of one of the letters that Ms. Hill was sent confirming a receipt of an application and a copy of that application.
All right, sir. Proceed.
We received two applications from Ms. Hill in October 21st of 2005 and another application on dated November the 4th, 2005. We also received an application in the name of Marie B. Hill, which I believe is Ms. Hill's mother, on October the 21st, 2005, and another application from Clyde Hill, I'm not sure of the relationship, on December the 1st, 2005. As far as the actual applications Ms. Hill signed herself in her name, I note that she clearly signed the applications, which you have a copy of one of them. There is a note about midway down that application that says, I hereby submit the $25 fee, and further explains that the applicant is agreeing to pay all costs, including the newspaper ad for advertising, and all charges for surveying, mapping, assigning, and recording, and comply with all legal requirements per the code. So we processed those applications. At the time Ms. Hill was in, I believe my staff informed her. She asked the approximate cost of the ads, and I believe she was informed somewhere in the $400 to $500 range. We did send the public notice.
What was that number based upon?
What we believed we had seen. What happens when we ask for an affidavit from the newspaper to verify that the ad ran? And some newspapers just send us the affidavit with a copy of the ad. Some newspapers send us the actual sheet that shows the actual cost of the ad. So we can go back and look to see what some of the ads have cost in the past. And we believe that, you know, based on what we've been seeing, and it varies quite a bit by newspaper. They're as cheap as around $100 to as much as what we believe $400 or $500 in the larger papers.
Thank you.
So that's what that was based on. All of these applications that we received that we're talking about right here were in the Nansemond River or Chuckatuck Creek that required advertising. At that time, we were using the Virginian Pilot, which was a paper of local circulation. We did forward these to the newspaper. We write the ads and forward them to the newspaper, and then the newspaper fills the applicant. They did run. The first two ran on October the 24th. Well, we forwarded them on October the 21st, and they ran on November the 2nd, another one on the 13th, and the Marie B. Hill application ran on November the 2nd, and we sent it on November the 2nd, and it ran on November the 13th. During the first week of December of 2005, I did receive a call from Ms. Hill concerning the cost of the advertisements in the Virginian Pilot. I noted at that time that that was the paper we used pursuant to the code, that it was a paper of general circulation for that area. She indicated that the bill was high, as I recall, I believe around $600 per ad. I informed her that for applications in Suffolk, specifically the Nansemond River, that we used the Virginian Pilot as we deemed there was no other paper of general circulation in that city.
Mr. Stagg, was that based upon an established policy and procedure set forth by a list of publications here, or did you make that determination?
Well, historically, we have a list that in our database that we have used, and I'll address a little bit of how that's changed over the years in a minute, but at the time, we were using the Virginian Pilot, and I'll explain why in just a second.
Okay.
She questioned why we didn't use the Smithfield Times, and I informed her that it was not my opinion that the Smithfield Times was a newspaper of general circulation in the city of Suffolk. It does circulate in Ottawa County and Surrey, and we do use it for our applications in the Pagan River and the James River on that side of the river. She then questioned why we didn't use the Suffolk News Herald. We had used the Suffolk News Herald in the past, many years ago, as we did deem that to qualify as a paper of general circulation. However, my predecessor, chief engineer, dropped the use of that paper quite a few years ago. I worked in the department at the time, and it's my recollection that the reason was that we believed the circulation was either so low or possibly even it stopped publication. I'm not sure for a short period of time. But in any event, we deemed that it didn't really meet the code requirement of circulation, so we dropped using it and we began to use the Virginian Pilot. I will note that we used the Virginian Pilot for all applications in Virginia Beach, Lynn Haven System, Broad Bay, because we know of no other paper in that area that is of general circulation. After talking to Ms. Hill, I did agree with you that, you know, $600 was a pretty high amount, and that I would agree to contact the Virginian Pilot to start with to see why the ads seem to be higher than what we had historically been seeing, and that I would also call the Suffolk paper and investigate both their circulation and appropriateness for using that paper. I did do that in December. I did get a confirmation from the Virginian Pilot that they had just recently, in the fall of 2005, raised their rates, which was part of the reason the ad was more. They also informed me that they were adding, and I believe Ms. Hill last month said $30. They informed me at the time it was $25, I believe, per week for an online ad in their pilot online internet advertisements. I told them we didn't need that. I didn't think it was required by the code. They said, well, you get it. I said, but we don't want it. They said, but you get it. I said, but you charge a separate fee. They said, well, really we do, but you have to pay it. So that added also to the cost of the ad. If it's $25 a week, that's an additional $100. Because contrary to habitat permit advertisements that only have to run once, the code specifies that orchard grant applications run once a week for 4 weeks. So it has to run four times. I contacted the Suffolk News Herald, and in discussing with their legal advertising person their circulation, and we discussed, I believe she worked there even when we had previously used the paper, and she recalled that we had used them. I determined that not only was their circulation, but their publication, I believe they're published three or four times a week, more often than the Smithfield Times, it would qualify as a paper of general circulation in the city of Suffolk, and certainly the ads would be cheaper. So I made the decision to start using the Suffolk News Herald for all applications that fell within the city of Suffolk, which would include all of the Nansemond River, some of the James River, and one side of Chuckatuck Creek. One side of Chuckatuck Creek's in Suffolk, and the other side's in Olive-White County.
So subsequent to her inquiry, based on the high amount of the or high price of the previous two ads, you then pursued the suggestion that she had made. Is that
right.
Correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Now, I also informed her there was nothing I could do about the three ads that had already run in the Virginian Pilot because they had already run, and therefore she had been billed for them. I will note that the Virginian Pilot, apparently at least at that time and may still, will run the ad without payment in advance. Most newspapers require payment up front, or they require a separate paper signed by the applicant to the newspaper that they agree to pay the charges. Separate from our letter and our application, it just says that the applicant agrees to pay all charges, including the advertising. So the ads ran, and she was billed for them, after the fact. I did, after researching it, call her and tell her that, based on what I had found, that we could run ads in the future. I had withheld a couple of the applications from advertising based on her initial call about the cost of these. I told her I'd hold them until I investigated. Based on the investigation, I determined they both qualified to run in the Suffolk paper, and we ran those in the Suffolk paper. So the two of them that we did make a change and ran them in the cheaper publication. And just synopsize, it's in your report there, but Ms. Hill called again in this year, May of this year, again about the cost of the advertisements. I conferred with our accounting department and informally with our attorney general representative, and based on our policy and our application that clearly states that all charges, including advertising, will be paid by the applicant, and the letter that states the same when we confirm receipt of the application, that we were unable to refund a partial or full payment of the ad. I believe Ms. Hill was informed of this decision by staff. I believe she called again the end of May. She also called the Secretary of Natural Resources, who again contacted our office. We provided some of the same information that I just gave you of a timeline. And we were investigated more and found that, risk management of the Commonwealth would be the appropriate process and the tort process, which Jane, I believe, will explain a little more in detail. Ms. Hill was informed of that, and I believe she stated last month that she had not pursued that at that time. And I believe that gets us up to date on the process of this. I will note that as part of investigating this for the report, that I went back and looked at all the applications we got in 2005 that were basically in the James River system that might have been in this situation. We had 29 applications. 14 of those were in the James River. Of those, only 11 were within the city of Suffolk. They were in the James River or its tributaries. 11 of those were within the city of Suffolk, either Nansemond or Chuckatuck Creek. The other three were in the James River, Pagan River, and Olivet County. We ran those in the Smithfield Times. We didn't have any applications in the James on the Newport News side. We used the Daily Press on the Newport News side. The Daily Press cost is comparable to the Virginian Pilot, at least pre the pilot going up. We believe that the Daily Press is also in the $400 to $500 range for their ads. And that's the newspaper we use for the Newport News side of the James, and some other localities as well. Of the 11 within the city of Suffolk, 5 ran in the Virginian Pilot, 6 ran in the Suffolk News Herald after we made the change of using the Suffolk News Herald. And they were all based on the date they were received, because the ones we received before we made the change, we didn't know that the ads had gone up. We sent them to the pilot, and they ran. Afterwards, we ran the rest of them in the Suffolk News Herald. And again, I'll reiterate that in Virginia Beach, we still use the Virginia Pilot. We really don't feel we have any other choice.
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Stagg?
Mr. Chairman, I have one.
Mr. Holland.
What is the cost of Suffolk Times? Do you have that?
Ms. Hill may be able to tell you that when I talked to them on the phone, they indicated that they believed a typical ad would be anywhere from $150 to about $200. I believe the Smithfield Times charges around $88. They have a flat rate they charge no matter what the length of the ad. The length of the ad affects the cost, too.
I understand. But Smithfield Times is $88.
Yeah, they're probably one of the cheapest ones. So it does range, there's quite a bit of range.
Thank you, Ben. Ms. McCroskey? Were you previously sworn this morning, were you not?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, ma'am.
Good morning. From time to time, I get calls from folks who've been dealing with the agency and feel like that we've caused them a problem or caused them a financial hardship in the performance of our duty. So when I spoke to Mrs. Hill and she told me her concerns, I did what I always do, and I refer the citizens or the people that have been dealing with our agency to the state's tort claim process. And I gave Mrs. Hill the name and the address and the phone number of the Division of Risk Management. They're the people that administer the tort claim process on behalf of the Commonwealth, I believe based on authority that's delegated from the Attorney General's office. And I know that the tort claim process can be a little bit confusing. If you look at their website and you talk to the folks that work in the Division of Risk Management, but basically what you need to do is simply write a letter, state your concern and the relief that you want, and that would constitute a tort claim. And you would send that in to the Division of Risk Management. We are prohibited as employees of the state from doing a filing a tort claim on behalf of a citizen. So there's no way that we can assist in the process other than to give the information, the contact information. So, Commissioner, was that what you wanted me to say, or do y'all have any questions?
How many times have you attempted to, or have you interacted with Ms. Hill in having these discussions of the way the process works?
I have spoken with Mrs. Hill several times. I'm sorry.
Several is one, three, five?
I would say two or three times.
Okay.
And,
Can you, Mr. Jessica, clarify the tort claim and the way it works in the Commonwealth of Virginia as my legal or our legal advisor?
Yes, if somebody negligently causes a harm to an individual in the course of their performance of their duties, the Virginia Tort Claims Act provides it's a waiver of the state's sovereign immunity, because if you don't have a waiver of immunity, you don't get anything from the state. You have to have a waiver of sovereign immunity. And it's the Tort Claims Act that might apply in a circumstance like this if there were a legal error for which a remedy exists. It seems to be the most logical place to start. As Ms. McCroskey said, we can't assist people in filing claims against us or telling them how to sue us. There's a process out there. There's information available, and it needs to be pursued by the individual claimant or his or her attorney. And what Ms. McCroskey said about the process is correct. Any questions for me?
Any questions for Mr. Josephson? Ms. Hill, would you like to address the commission, please? It's totally up to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am.
I am just here with my elderly mother as a result of, as Mr. Stack and Ms. Mikowski briefed you on, regarding the irreparable harm that this will cause myself as well as my mother and my other family member. I brought this before you because this is where I came initially to submit application for the Oyster Ground as a result of being a descendant of an oysterman, which was my father, who was a waterman. And as I spoke before you at the previous meeting, this was once our livelihood, and when we found out that the oysters returned as a result of them being depleted from a chemical called ketone back in the late 50s, we were excited, and because now we can go back to what was once our livelihood that made us totally self-sufficient and independent. And of course, if you take the shipyard out of Newport News, what would happen in Newport News? It would decline. And that's what happened to our community some people consider it an eyesore now. So as a result of this industry, which was our culture that has returned, we would like to, you know, be able to reap the benefits again.
And you and I started discussing this some several years ago when you contacted the law enforcement division
and
with these records.
Mm-hmm, you're very instrumental, and I thank you for
that.
I'm just a layman person, and I returned here back in 99 to become my mother's caregiver as a result of my father passing away. So, you know, I don't have an attorney. I'm just here before you and at your mercy, because this is where I said, as I mentioned, I came to start this process. And I do not recall being given a quote as to what the cost would be for the Virginia pilot. As with the Smithfield Times, the ad was $85, but prior to them running the ad, they did call me for authorization. And subsequent to me contacting this agency regarding the enormous cost of $751 and the online fee was $30. And then, you know, another ad, $1,468, another one, $688. And as a consumer, in starting this process here and submitting the application, I wasn't given the option of, you know, where this ad could be placed, considering the fact that I would be responsible for the payment.
Well, I try to encapsulate this. I think when you came here to apply for the oyster leases, there was an established process in place that we had been utilizing in the standard form that agreed that the cost would be paid. It is unfortunate that dialogue did not occur that would have resulted in you inquiring specifically how much the price would have been, because then you probably could have made a more informed decision as to whether you wanted to progress or not. However, this agency had an established procedure which we'd use uniformly as far as these specific water bodies are concerned. And as I understand it from Mr. Stagg's report, we did as good government should do at the time that you brought forth a suggestion to say, hey, wait a minute, maybe can we look at this? We then went forward and examined and investigated the potential or the possibility of utilizing the Suffolk News Herald. By doing that, I think we did what good government should have done. That is, they took the suggestion from a citizen, and we have now implemented that suggestion. And what you did, although your cost on the previous application to the Virginian Pilot, we have absolutely no control over, you assisted yourself and many others probably in reducing the cost of advertising for similarly situated oyster grounds. Now, we, as we have told you, have absolutely no control over what a private entity charges for the advertising cost. We also have, as an agency, as been explained to you by Ms. McCroskey and Mr. Josephson, no ability independently as an agency of the Commonwealth of Virginia to do anything to address your concerns about the overages independently, as I said. The only process that is available to you, even if we wanted to, if we believed we had wronged a citizen of the Commonwealth, we're not in a position lawfully to provide any redress. The only avenue that is available, unless you can come up with a different one, whether it's a court of law or whatever, but the only normal avenue to address this type of situation is the Tort Claims Act. And I know Ms. McCroskey has addressed that with you a number of times. I want to do that with you one more time just to explain that we've had a number of watermen in my previous job as chief of law enforcement file tort claims. For example, if you threw my oysters over when you shouldn't have, or I was found not guilty of an oyster violation, I want to have that amount refunded. They submitted their claims to tort claim and from time to time were successful or unsuccessful. It's not a difficult situation to go through. But as of today and after the report, this agency is in no position whatsoever to offer you any redress other than what is available to you by law, and that's the Tort Claim Act. So that, I think, satisfies the report that I was supposed to provide in accordance with Commissioner Pruitt's directive of last month's meeting. And that's where we are.
Well, you said as far as that there was no recourse under the law, but what about my rights and my elderly mother here rights under due process and equal protection and the Equal Protection Clause under the U.S. Constitution and as to my 14th?
14th Amendment. I think that's where I'll let my lawyer address it, but I think the due process comes into your ability to file your claim with the tort claim under the Tort Claims Act. That's your 14th Amendment. Carl, am I correct or incorrect? Or there are other remedies available as well.
The Commonwealth has provided the Tort Claims Act as a waiver of sovereign immunity to allow people who believe they have legitimate claims to make those claims against the government. Is a vehicle available to you? I'm not aware of any discrimination. It seems to me from the report that I heard today, everybody was treated the same up until some point in time when it was realized that we might be able to find a newspaper of general circulation for this particular limited area, which costs less.
That's my understanding. That's correct.
Sure that, you know, people were singled out.
No, sir.
Well, as far as when I can make a comparison of the advertisement that was ran for several particular applicants, the ad did not run in the same fashion as my ad or my mother's ad did, which as a result we received this bill that's six times greater than any other newspaper.
I think that probably was a function of the newspaper, not a function of this agency. We cannot be responsible for what the newspaper did and the way that they advertised it.
Okay. So in the meantime, since the last time I spoke before you, my mother and I and my other elderly relative have been served by the sheriff to appear in court regarding this bill. So in the interim of submitting a Virginia tort claim, not knowing what the end result is going to be, you don't have a sense of responsibility?
We have a sense of responsibility to facilitate the citizens that we deal with under the provisions of the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia. And that's exactly what I've been trying to explain today as far as your vehicle and avenue for appeal. That's my sense of responsibility. My sense of responsibility was to have Ms. McCroskey contact you and provide you all of the information at your avail to address this matter.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
No problem.
Well, I spoke with her, yes, as a result of me initiating several calls to her as to, one, whether or not there was any resolution that this board had made or will be making prior to you convening again. And she indicated to me, no, that I would have to wait until the day of the meeting. And there was the occasion where she referred me to the Division of Risk Management, and as I had indicated, I contacted previously when I spoke before you that I contacted that agency, and they indicated that they could not provide me with any assistance in filing this claim, that all they did was basically refer me to a website. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, my elderly mother having to, you know, who is under her doctor's care. And this has caused me great emotional stress.
I can understand.
And for us to have to go before a judge or take my mother into court regarding this bill.
That's something I have absolutely no control over. I empathize with you. I understand. But those obligations are something that this board, this commission, has absolutely nothing to do with.
So if you went into a business as a consumer...
Yes, ma'am.
And to spend your money, you expect for there to be a price revealed to you to make a conscious decision as to whether or not you wanted to make that purchase.
Or there's an old rule known as caveat emptor, buyer beware, where it's a onus is on the buyer to ask a specific question as to how much a cost is going to be incurred during the entire course of the transaction. Mr. Jefferson?
Ms. Hill, the point here is you think that there have been some mistakes, legal errors, but this board is not at liberty, it doesn't have authority, this commission, to make that determination and give you any money if you're correct. You need to pursue the vehicle, the mechanism that exists, if you believe you were wrong and you need and you're entitled to some money as a result of that wrong. And that is to try, and it's not that complicated. It's simply to, as was explained earlier, explain the situation in a letter and say what you're looking for and send it to risk management. And you need to do that within a certain time limit. Of course, the limit is a year, I think, so you've got plenty of time.
Well, we don't have a year before it's time for us to appear before a judge.
I understand that. But the longer you wait, the longer you're not going to get a resolution of that. And the commission certainly doesn't have any authority to provide you the money or to represent you before the judge.
If we did, it would be a violation of Virginia law.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. We've had a request to adjust one agenda item, if it pleases the board. Mr. Francis Chester. Mr. Chester here. Mr. Chester has a request, and I've spoken with Mr. Grab, who indicates that it come forward. That it shouldn't take too very long.
Just a few minutes.
Could you state your request, Mr. Chester, first for the record?
Yes, my name is Francis Chester, and I operate a sheep and wool business and a wool mill out of Augusta County, Churchville, Virginia, in particular.
Okay. Mr. Chester has a pending court appearance. I know a lot of people have a lot of different schedule issues to be dealt with, but as I'm indicated by staff, it shouldn't take but about 10 or 15 minutes. Mr. Cale, is lunch here? Check.
Yes.
It is. What I'd like to do is to take Mr. Chester's case. We will recess. If shortly after that, do you think it'll take very long, Mr. Chester?
5-10 minutes.
5 or 10 minutes. Recess after that and be back here. That clock's not right, is it? By 1 o'clock. So if you have a pending case, be back by 1 and we'll take the rest of the docket. Shouldn't take long. Mr. Grab, the way that this is going to go forward, you want Tony to present first? Staff will present first and then you can be offered an opportunity to rebut.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chester. Commission members, this is the situation. You'll recall that Mr. Chester appeared before the commission back in May regarding the assessed royalty for a permit we had sent to him for payment for a bridge over Jennings Branch in Augusta County that was on his farm. At the time, the commission asked if it would be okay to have this deferred so that he could come back and have it heard in June. Mr. Chester agreed that he would come back in June for the commission to hear his case. However, Mr. Chester indicated soon after that he realized he had a conflict with the June meeting and sent a letter asking it to be deferred until July. Mr. Chester, this is the information that the commission has in front of it at this time. Essentially, what you have here is a permit was authorized and sent to Mr. Chester for execution. It included a royalty assessment in it of $1,140.75 for the square foot encroachment of the bridge that Mr. Chester proposed to build on his property. The bridge went from one side of his farm to the other, where he was selling, or maybe has sold now, they may have closed on two lots that represented the farm, represented the land on the other side of the farm. They were for other individuals to buy that land, to develop that land, and build houses on that land. The bridge would be for their access. Mr. Chester, I understand, has some rights to go over there on a hayride and take folks that utilize his farm during special events or public events that he holds. And I understand from one of the property owners who have bought on the other side, or were buying on the other side, excuse me, that they would also allow Mr. Chester to mow hay over there, but that wasn't necessarily a contractual agreement in the part of the sale, as I understand it, but they would allow him to mow hay until they built their home sometime down the road. And that's one person thought they were going to build their home on the other side of the river, or the side of the creek, in about 5 years. So with that, our understanding was that this was basically a commercial development of the property. Mr. Chester was selling the property. The bridge was providing access for the new owners. And as a result, we viewed it as commercial. And as a result, staff assessed the $1.50 square foot fee for the bridge, or royalty for the bridge. And if you do the math, it comes out to 760.5 square feet times $1.50. That's where we get the $1,140.75 from for the encroachment. So staff believes the royalty assessment was consistent with the commission's directive that was adopted back in December for our new royalty schedule. And as a result, we're recommending that the royalty not be changed. If you have any other questions, there's quite a bit of history that goes with this application. That's kind of different than the royalty assessment, but I'll be glad to try and answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions of Mr. Watkinson? Mr. Robbins?
I have one, Mr. Chairman. The requirement of the royalty then is a function of the use of the bridge per se. In other words, if it were simply private use,
I think we could have considered a lower royalty rate if it had been just for Mr. Chester to get from one side of his farm to the other for his normal farm and practices. It would have been his own private use. It wouldn't have been development or commercial in nature and allowed to sell the property.
But since residential development has occurred on the other side, you're considering that to be part of a commercial arrangement?
That's correct. That was our assessment.
Thank you.
Any other questions, staff? Mr. Chester, please. Mr. Chester, I know you're a member of the bar, but you're in this situation, you're an applicant, I need to swear you in. Solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, help you God.
Certainly.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
State your name. And
my name is Francis Chester, and I operate a sheep and wool operation in a wool mill in Augusta County, Virginia. I'm also an attorney. First of all, Mr. Chairman, congratulations on your new position.
Thank you, sir.
And gentlemen of the board, I appear before you because I feel that what has been going on with this situation has been nothing short of mind-boggling and very unfair and unjust. As the log that has been presented to you by your assistants indicated, I came before this agency on January 10, 2005, and applied for a permit to connect the north and south ends of my farm. What has happened was I was not able to get financing from the banks to build my mill because they felt that wool mills are going out. I had to resort, reluctantly, to put up the back end of that farm up for sale. I have two farms. This was one of them. With the understanding that I would be able to continue to farm for a number of years in that back section and to permit the agri-tourism activities that we do. We put on a pumpkin fest every year, which draws thousands of people. And we also have a wool fair to promote the agricultural products that we produce in that area, primarily wool and lamb. So I put the property up for sale. To do that, I needed to build a bridge. I thought it was going to be quite simple. I didn't think this was going to get totally out of hand. I submitted a proposal to Tracy West. She was very kind and very, very assistant in her ways. She indicated that this was a very simple project and should be approved, and the permit should be issued within a week. That's what I was told. She told me that it was going to cost between $50 and $100, because I specifically asked her how much the permit was going to be. So without any, I just accepted that was going to be the fee. Then I found out when the permit was not issued immediately that there had been a letter of objection to the bridge based by a person downriver to the thing. And I approached Tracy about it, and she says, you need to make some modifications. So I hired an engineer, and the plans were modified according to the wishes of this gentleman. And it was submitted to this commission. I didn't hear anything. I followed up with calls, letters, everything. And suddenly I found out that my plans were lost. And they suggested I send another set. So I did. Sent another set. Then they said, well, we don't know where the plans are. I spoke to one of the secretaries. He told me the problem with this agency is that we're overwhelmed. She says, at this particular point, we got 3,000 applications before us. And she says, I know you've been waiting a long time. I'll see if I can't move this along. The next thing I heard, that there was an objection by the same gentleman, a neighbor of mine, that he wanted further modifications. So I hired a second engineer, and that was done, and supposedly was submitted to the board, to this agency. And then I was told that they didn't know where it was. This went on from January 10th of last year until I just got totally fed up, and I personally came here and appeared before this board, and thank goodness your board was kind enough to allow me to get that permit to get on with this job. I can't tell you what this thing has cost me. This thing has cost me thousands of dollars beyond what we ever anticipated. But let me give you an example of some of the confoolery that I've had to deal with. And it's not all your agency's fault. Department of Transportation decided that after 10 years of my operating over there, that I needed a commercial entrance. Ah, five-figure position I was placed in. I said, why do I need that? I said, never, with all the thousands of cars that come there, do I need this? No accidents, no traffic jams. When you got a good thing, why do we have to go further? They says, you got to do it. 2 weeks after being told this, a crew of engineers come on my property, and they're surveying my property, and I went over to them. I says, what are you guys up to? They says, well, we're going to tear down the bridge in front of your farm here, and we're probably going to do it within a year or so. And they laughed. They says, I understand the state wants you to put a commercial entrance. I says, yeah. They laughed. They says, don't do it. I says, why? This is because they're going to tear it up next year. I said, you mean to tell me the state wants me to put all this money in, they're going to tear it up? They laughed. They says, don't tell anybody we told you, but that's what's going on. So I went back. And guess what? They says, God, we didn't know about the bridge going in. I says, well, don't you think you ought to check? They checked and they came back. Sorry, you still got to do it. I says, well, wait a minute. Let's back up here. I says, you want me to put all this money in? Then you're going to tear it up next year. You're a taxpayer. I'm a taxpayer. Do you realize that you're going to have to reimburse me for all this? They says, that's right. I says, I don't understand how government functions. I says, I may have a degree in political science along with several other degrees, but I cannot, for the likes of me, understand that. And then I'm faced with this situation. I come along, and when I got the permit, I was told I had to pay $1,200 and some odd. Gentlemen, $1,200 and some odd for this? That's what I'm paying. What am I paying this for? A private bridge that I'm paying the cost of? I'm going across a property that I own The state comes along and says, no, you got to pay us $1,200. Sir, gentlemen, do you think that's fair? You think that's just? I brought before us the Constitution of the United States, and I think maybe we ought to address that issue. There's a section of this over here, and this is the Article 1 of the Constitution. It says over here, no state shall pass any bill of attainder or ex post facto law. Ex post facto law says we come along and we pass a law, and anything that your conduct you did before that, we're going to penalize you. That's what it is, plain and simple. December 1st, you people had this law to work with. You raised the tax for whatever reason. Here I am, January 1st, trying to deal with your agency, trying to comply with the agency's request to get this thing done, a simple bridge that has gone into, like, the Verrazano Bridge. And by the way, you go out there, I'm calling it, by the way, the Little Verrazano. This is taken on into a huge situation. You think that's fair? It's against the Constitution. Now we go to the 14th Amendment. It says that you cannot take a property from someone without just compensation. I feel that this agency has taken money from me without just compensation. I feel that this is wrong. And this leads to a distrust of government. I mean, I got enough problems with the government, what I just showed you. I mean, small business people were getting hurt all the time. Government should be working with businesses, not hurting them. Let's work together. I'm trying to build a business out there, and it's growing. And it's a wonderful thing, and it's employing people that don't have jobs. Why do you people give me such a hard time? I don't understand why government gives us such a hard time. So I pray to you, gentlemen, that you reconsider this. Please, let's reimburse. I'm not asking for the $50 or $100, whatever it is. I'm asking for that assessment that I feel is unjust. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chester. Any questions for Mr. Chester? Mr. Holland.
The Virginia Department of Highways, do they still consider your entrance a commercial entrance?
I've had to put it in.
You put the commercial entrance
in? Yes, sir. All that money's been put in.
Okay. Thank you.
Any comments, Mr. Joseph, pertaining to the legal arguments that he's made?
Well, with respect to the legal arguments that Mr. Chester has made, he's raising constitutional issues about taking property and getting a piece of paper for $1,200 relating to his own property. And I think with respect to that, my response would be that under the Code of Virginia, state-owned subaqueous lands are state-owned, presumed to be state-owned, unless it's proved to the contrary. And the proof to the contrary requires establishment of a king's grant or a colonial patent back when it was available and authorized. So it's not personal property unless it's established to be personal property. Presumption under Virginia law is that subaqueous lands are state-owned property.
Counselor, then under that basis, then I don't own my farms. The state owns it. That's what you're saying,
no,
basically.
No, I'm saying under the water. I'm not saying the land.
Under the water.
Under the water.
What water bodies do I own, and what water bodies does the state own? How do we determine that?
If it's navigable, it's presumed to be owned by the state.
Sir, that
is not. Navigable, it's presumed to be owned by the private property owner.
That is not a navigable body of water. You can't.
That's always a factual issue that,
Try running a boat in there. I guarantee you, you'll go 1 foot.
I'm not familiar with the area, so I can't speak to that. But that whether a river is navigable under state law is a factual issue. It's different from what is navigable under federal law, which is more lenient, more pro-government for federal purposes, for navigability purposes. It's a matter of determining whether it's navigable. If it's navigable, it's presumed to be owned by the state.
Navigation means to be able to move. Am I correct, sir? You can't move. You can't move a boat there. I'm telling you that now. So it's not navigable. So that issue goes out the window. My point is this, that What about the argument of ex post facto? You people passed the law.
That's what I'm going to ask. If I could ask Tony a couple questions, you're right down my line. Presumably, when Ms. West informed Mr. Chester of the amount of the permit, had everything gone unprotested, smoothly, the drawings had been submitted, could the permit have been issued prior to the resumption of collection of royalties?
I would think yes. Typically, permit for bridge project at 60 days, maybe 90 days to resolve issues, get it out the door. That's a typical time frame. So when Tracy was asked about the cost of the project in January of 2005, there was no royalty being assessed at that point because the royalty schedule and the royalty authority from the General Assembly had not been put in place.
Subsequent to the resumption of the collection of royalty decision made by this commission as authorized by the General Assembly, were there any impediments caused by the applicant that caused a delay in the issuance of this permit?
I believe so, yes.
How many?
As one of the protests, let me just take a second. The application was objected, as Mr. Chester referred to, by his downstream neighbor. That protest first was filed in March of 2005 by the downstream neighbors. Some additional information was submitted. We received an additional protest letter in August 26 of 2005. In December, I believe it was, no, I'm sorry, January 6, 2006, we received a letter from the protestants indicating that juror objections had been resolved. In that letter, they referenced two drawings that Mr. Chester had prepared to address the engineering of the bridge, the floodplain issues, where the bridge was going, and address their concerns. We had gotten one of the drawings from Mr. Chester that was referenced in that letter. And that was Mr. Chester and I had this conversation several times on the phone. We needed the second drawing that was referenced in that letter. And it wasn't until I actually met Mr. Chester at his farm in March to investigate the grading activities that had occurred in the stream that I got a copy of that engineering drawing, which later became part of the permit. So it was not until March of this year that we received one of the drawings that we had been trying to get from Mr. Chester to resolve all the issues so that we could issue the permit in this case.
Thank you. Any other questions for Tony? Mr. Chester, you have 2 minutes to wrap up, please, sir.
Yes. Mr. Wilkerson has indicated that there were two drawings. I asked this agency several times, what do you need? They says, we need your drawing. I sent three times the drawings. When he came and visited me, I says, what do you need? He said, let me see your file. We went through the file. He says, oh, that's the one I want. I says, why didn't you let me know from day one about this?
Uh-huh.
And when I gave it to him, that seemed to solve the whole thing. I did do two things at the request of this neighbor, and we did, and I thought it was submitted. And when I found out that the second one was not part of their package, that's what happened.
Mr. Watkinson.
I just want to add my take on that aspect. The two letters that were referenced in the protestant's withdrawal letter, we attempted to explain to Mr. Chester, or I did, because he had been dealing with Tracy, and I ended up dealing with Mr. Chester to try and resolve this matter. The two documents that were referenced were the engineering drawings Mr. Chester had provided. I specifically referred to the different names of those drawings and the companies that prepared those drawings in my conversations with Mr. Chester over the phone to try and describe to him what we needed to resolve this so we could issue a permit. When I went to visit him at the farm, he pulled out that drawing that he ended up giving to me and said, oh, I finally realized what it was you needed, and here's a copy of it. And he gave me an original which I brought back to the office, and we used to issue the final permit. So there was some confusion on Mr. Chester's part, I think, about which drawing he needed. He sent us one drawing several times, but we needed that different drawing of the one of the two that was referenced in the protestant's letter of withdrawal, or the letter they used to withdraw their protest. And it wasn't until I met him on site that we got that letter. So we attempted at the staff level to try to explain to Mr. Chester which drawings we were talking about.
Any other questions, Mr. Watkinson? Matters before the commission for consideration. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for counsel. Just want to know if if there is any mechanism for any applications that were under consideration and active at the time that we passed our policy for those being grandfathered. It seems to me that when we passed the policy, we adopted it effective that date. But is there even opportunity for, quote, grandfathering applications that were...
Well, I think that's the whole issue. The issue is, when is the royalty due? And as staff's write-up mentions, it's a permit issuance royalty. It's not an application fee. It's not a processing fee. It's when the permit is issued. And when you adopted your policy, it was for all future permit issuance.
Thank you.
Any further discussions of the commission?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Holland.
Based on all the testimony and due to the fact that there's a commercial entrance into the property, I think that clears up the whether it's commercial in nature. I move that we adopt staff recommendation.
Second.
Second by Mr. Robbins. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Chair votes aye. We'll be in recess until about 1:15. We'll resume the agenda. Thank you, Mr. Chester.
Thank you.